I'm gonna shut the door.
No, leave it, because those guys are gonna come in. Unless there's no noise here.
I know, but we're gonna talk loud.
How loud are we gonna talk, Nate?
Probably about like this, Donovan. We're gonna. So it's good to project.
Project. Okay.
Yes. Feel it. All right. This is great.
What are we talking about?
We're gonna talk about what you're doing now.
Oh. We're going to talk about brand. We're going to talk about how. We're going to talk about food.
Okay.
I'm excited to talk about the food. Are we going? Have we already been going?
Let's talk about food. So I had like a banana and a Diet Coke with lime for breakfast.
No.
Oh.
No.
No bananas?
Protein.
Bananas are not good for breakfast?
No.
She's right. I was just having this conversation.
Protein
for breakfast.
You got to have protein.
That will keep you from crashing later.
Absolutely. Yeah. Banana's great. It's a good sort of supplement or a snack.
Okay.
As your sole, like, thing
so
for
like
a meal?
A 96-ounce ribeye?
I don't know that I would advise that necessarily.
That's kind of... I think you're going too far the other way.
Yes. Now. The pendulum is swinging a little far.
Can we give this show some context now?
Yes.
Hey, welcome to the Reflex Blue Show, everybody. I'm Nate Voss.
Donovan Beery.
Great. We're here at the HOW Conference. We're talking with Bryn Muth, a former... editor-in-chief of HOW Magazine.
That's right.
No longer.
Correct.
And the last issue was your you were still the editor, right?
That's right. The one that just would have appeared fairly recently.
Color and Design.
You got it.
Awards issue with a beautiful, beautiful cover.
The gorgeous cover.
Who did that cover?
Her name is Yulia Brodskaya, and she's from London. And we featured her in the magazine a couple of issues prior, and we all loved her work because... Who wouldn't love her work?
Yeah,
and
it's
so
gorgeous.
Our director, Bridget McCarron, had the super brilliant idea to hire her to do the cover.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a fun process.
And I hear that even though you have left as your duties, you're still actually did or are handling some of the social media through conference.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, tell us about that. Like, you're tweeting?
I've been blogging, sort of managing the HOW Live Facebook presence, answering people's questions. Doing all of the kind of blogging activity about the event, news updates, speaker profiles.
Wow. Okay. So plenty.
All that stuff. Yeah.
Plenty to keep you busy.
Yeah. It's been good. It's been a lot of fun.
All right. But so now it's the morning and I've forgotten, but now you're blogging, you're writing about food.
I am
right. Is
writing
this is your passion
about,
as I understand it?
It is absolutely a passion, a long, very long time passion. And I kind of recently just figured out how to connect writing and cooking, both of which I love. So.
Okay, tell me more about like when did this start? Let's send people to the site now. Where's your site?
My site is writesforfood.com. It's number four. So WR.
Like a Prince thing. Like
yeah.
Used to write all
yeah.
The songs
sure. Okay. Absolutely.
Yes.
It's like that.
Brynwood.
Because I'm that.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. I'm that kind of cool.
A lot like Prince.
Yeah.
Roughly the same height, maybe.
Absolutely.
Great.
Yeah.
So when did this start? How did this start? Let's start with a passion for food, and we'll go from there.
Passion for food and love of words and love of food are a long time thing for me. I grew up my parents are all excellent cooks. My brother's a chef.
Oh.
So it's kind of that part of it's in my DNA. And I loved reading and writing when I was a little kid. And so those are two things that I've just always sort of held on to. And, you know, writing has been my job. So, and I love it.
Right.
And food has always been a hobby. My husband and I love to cook. And we shop at farmers markets. And we're just sort of geeks about being in the kitchen and hanging out together. So, I started Writes for Food as just a fun, creative outlet blog last summer, just to write about what we were doing, you know, stuff we were making, recipes that we were trying, stuff we were finding in the farmer's market.
Mm-hmm. Doing the Julia Child cookbook, you know, all in one year.
Yeah, no, I'm not that ambitious. The thing about the way we, my husband and I approach cooking is like, you know, we like following recipes, but we're not slaves to them. And we just love to cook, and we make it fun, and it's super easy, and we screw up, and we don't care. And
I think that's the best way to cook. It's like, you know, when you see people that are really cooking, they're not sitting there with a little measuring cup of, you know, this many ounces of cumin or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just like, no, there's like bang, just pop it and go.
Yeah.
And it's not a, oh, geez, I don't mean to get profound. It's not a science. It's an art.
Right,
you know?
Absolutely. I mean, baking is a whole other thing because you have to be very exact.
Baking is totally science.
I've really tried
baking.
Yeah, yeah, that is definitely science. I mean, things go together
there's
in proportions for a reason, and there's chemistry. Right.
Right.
But, yeah, so the way we love to cook is just, you know, we riff, we just wing it, and if it works, great, and if it doesn't, then there's probably leftovers in the fridge, so it's no big deal. So I started writing about this stuff just for fun, And then people started telling me, gee, you know, this is obviously something you're passionate about. Have you ever thought about doing something with this as a career? And I was like, no, but that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And so
How long ago was this that idea started coming to your head?
Well, I started the blog back in almost a year ago. So I think it was late July last year. And I was just messing around with it. And then I ended up landing, like, completely randomly, a couple of freelance projects writing about food and cooking and recipes. And I really loved that kind of work. And so I was doing some of that stuff at, you know, nights and weekends. It's the classic, you know, you almost have two jobs because you're moonlighting and
I know a bit about that.
Exactly. And I just was finding that stuff was really interesting to me, and I wanted to spend more time on it, and kind of got to a point where it was like, well, I need to commit one way or another. Like, I need to do Writes for Food full time and make it a thing and try and make a go of it, or let it go. Like, just forget it. And I didn't want to do that.
Right.
So, and the great thing is, too, I mean, how's been having an awesome, like, year and a half. Last year was great. This year is great so far. And I, you know, the team that I worked with is awesome. And I felt like I could walk away without having any regrets.
I feel like it's a good time to turn the ship over
Absolutely.
To a new captain.
Right.
Which is Megan, right? Megan is doing
yep.
that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how long were you captain of the Haugen?
That would be 13 years.
So let's just go ahead and say what most people understand how to be is under your kind of guidance and leadership, like the modern how. Because now, were you around when how was like, here is how you do a clipping path?
That was
like, wasn't that the genesis?
That was the original, right?
Yeah, like,
absolutely. It was, well, it wasn't even clipping paths. I mean, this was way pre-computer back in the late 80s when the magazine was founded.
This is how to cut Ruby Lift.
Yeah, that's totally it. It was exactly that. It was like 10 pages of how to do layouts by hand, or how to do a pen and ink drawing, or a marker comp, or, you know, like all of this stuff.
I know it would be kind of niche, but there's probably a market for that right now, because who knows how to do Ruby Lift anymore?
Seriously, I know.
I've done it before, and I couldn't even tell you. If you press too hard with
the
knife,
you shred it, and it's sticky, and it's
I'm sure you can get a back issue if you dig out.
I don't know. Those might be kind of tough to come by.
Yeah, that was like the mid-80s, I think, when the magazine was founded. And how was my first real job out of college. So I'm going to date myself and say that was 20 years ago. And I answered a want ad in the paper. Remember that?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Classified
the paper
advertising
or want ads? I don't know
in the newspaper, right?
Okay.
So I got this job as an assistant editor at Howe. And so I kind of actually went back looking through some old issues fairly recently. And I think I've probably had a byline in every magazine for the last 20 years. I think I've written something for every issue for 20 years.
So I kind of think of this
as a retirement, because I've been there for a really long time.
You haven't really retired. You're certainly not retirement age.
I was there for a long time.
So how's the switch been? Just you know, you've, like, every magazine you have something writing in. You've been there for 20 years. You were in charge of it for 13 years. And now...
Oh, hello.
Hello. Vanished?
Correct.
Okay. As I was explaining to her, there is no other way that people should have been able to get into here. Formal lockouts, only the people who have the key besides a supervisor and security for emergency reasons can get into this room. So I can have security come up here and you can claim a missing property report, and we can do a lock interrogation on the door, see who exactly was the last person in here.
Would they have done that when they cleaned the room? Because they did swap the room out.
Yeah, the furniture has changed.
This has changed since last night. It has.
Yes.
Okay. So is it possible they removed the equipment thinking that it belongs to the hotel or to your AE department?
Or that it wasn't supposed to be in here.
Right.
There are also some notebooks missing and about this size.
I can talk to, you were talking to Rob Harris, correct? He was the one up here?
Yes.
So did you let him know that the room had changed?
Yes.
Okay. We can go from there. The door shouldn't have been open this morning, basically. It should have been on complete lockdown.
Well, it was locked when we got here.
Right. But what I'm saying is there's a difference between the door being locked and someone being able to put a key in to open it, as opposed to a lockout where even if another employee who had a key just to unlock it, he would stick it in and it would turn yellow and it wouldn't open the door. Mm-hmm. So that could have been the mistake to begin with, is that it wasn't on lockout, didn't have the right lock on it. So if they could get into here, it just might have been normally locked. And then with that being the case, because it wasn't supposed to start till tomorrow, it might not have been completely communicated to the afternoon staff, and they came in here to check the set and saw your stuff and did call somebody to come pick it up.
So I think moving forward, the most important part for us would actually be obviously locating the equipment and the notebooks and the things. So
I can definitely check with AV, my microphone guy.
Was there anything else?
A normal.
Yeah, what else?
We had
just the notebooks, but no more electrical.
Eight of these. It looks basically similar to this. There's like a box with some dice and my business cards in it.
Cardboard box with some promotional items.
Was Diana able to take her two boxes?
We took those, so her stuff was out of here.
Okay. Hi.
Yeah, I don't know if the person who changed the room would be around to ask.
That's the thing, is they'd have to maybe do the key detection thing to figure out.
We looked under all the tables and stuff. But
14 or 15 p.m. shift people, so we'd have to figure out who was the one who came up here to set the room. And fortunately, if they do or don't work today, they won't be in until 2 o'clock.
Okay.
So,
because I will tell you, originally the set was supposed to be the two small rounds with four chairs.
Right. What was up here after I called?
Right after I
talked to you guys about it, we figured out the whole room could be, I did call and say two cap tables with four chairs.
And we were talking to the gentleman who's going to set that up and decided, because there was a room set already done, we were able to use just this 6-foot narrow table.
Okay.
So it was just set in the middle of the room with four chairs and then the equipment on top of it at that point, because they did interview last night at 5. So it looks like they just moved that over and then brought these in.
Okay.
But it must have happened overnight sometime early this morning or sometime last night.
So you guys were, you guys did an interview last night.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so it was after 5.
It was after
6. It would have been after 6.
Like after 6 or 7.
Okay. Yeah.
And we can account for both keys. So.
Yeah, you guys have both of them. Okay. Let me ask around. I do apologize if this has happened. Let me ask around, see if I could figure out if someone put somewhere in one of the storage closets over here for AV, if someone picked it up, that sort of thing. I'll let my manager for AVT know, see if he knows who might have come up here, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And as soon as I know something, I will get back to you. And for now, I will make sure that security does come up and double-check the door and make sure that it is on the proper lockout.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll let them know that you're missing something. They're probably going to want to talk to you to do a missing property report.
Sure.
So we do have it on file. And then from there, they will probably do a lock interrogation. So I will send security up here.
If they alter that lock, will our keys still work?
Yeah, it's just a machine that they hook up, and it, you know, shows up who, what key went into the door at what times.
Okay.
So I will get that organized for you.
We had a backup. So.
I was going to say, where this material?
Right?
Did Bren bring that with her? She's so prepared.
Yeah.
It's like Mary Poppins with stuff in the carpet bag, you know?
She's an amazing woman.
Oh, it's true. Yeah,
right.
No.
I'm sorry, I know you're in the middle of this, but we'll figure it out.
Let's keep in touch.
And as soon as I will find out, I will let Suzanne know here, and
Thanks.
We'll get back to you, okay?
Great.
All right.
Thank you.
I have to do the whole question again? Oh, man. So, Bryn, so yeah, that was like 20 years of working at Howe, having something in every magazine, and you know, 13 years of being in charge of it and having all that responsibility and you know, obviously the conferences. And now, yo, you write from home.
I do.
From what I hope to be a comfortable chair.
It is. Well, it's not ergonomic, but it's comfortable. Okay. And I have my dog, which is awesome.
I loved working with my dog. Yeah. I worked with my dog for 3 years.
And I actually love having access to a kitchen pretty much full time because I can make lunch. Well, but I can also...
And then write about it.
Make things and write about it, which is great. So, yeah, I'm 7 weeks into it, so the working from home part is... still pretty, if you know, it's comfortable and I'm fine and I'm in a routine, and I think there'll probably get to be points where I need to get out and like have some other human interaction. Yeah. But
do you ever just kind of wander around saying, I feel like I should have more to do than I have?
You know, what's really what's very noticeable is what I don't miss at all is the flood of email.
Right,
like
my
working for a big company, it's kind of your day is sort of dictated by whatever comes into your inbox. And I found it incredibly distracting where I would be working on something and the little icon would start pinging at me and it would be an email and somebody needed something right away and you have to drop what you're doing. And it really kind of wrecked any kind of momentum that you had working. I find that I'm getting a ton of work done at home, like a ton of work done at home working by myself. So
if you like, we can set up some email Bryn day with the community. We have like a Twitter hashtag email Bryn day. Everyone send her an email and ask for something.
It's not bad.
Ask for something outlandish. Ask for the moon.
Do it like every Thursday or something.
Yeah. Oh my
Bryn,
God.
I need the moon.
Immediately.
I'll have you guys to thank for that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
that would be traceable.
Yeah, it sort of would be. Yeah. But no, I mean, I think that's one of, for me anyway, it's been one of the biggest changes from working in a corporate environment to working for myself is that, you know, there's just, I don't have hour-long meetings like four times a day,
right,
and I don't have this giant flooded inbox that I have to contend with. And so I feel like I'm just a lot more productive.
Oh, that's great. I think that that's actually kind of the opposite of what a lot of people go through when they make that switch. Is they find themselves, you know, not having the meetings, not having anyone else throwing a deadline at them, or you know, not having a flood of tasks coming in, and and their response to that is like, you know, if a homeless guy is suddenly given $1 million, he's not going to really know what to do with it.
Right, exactly. I totally get it.
And it's going to go downhill fast.
Right.
It's like, now I have time and freedom, and I'm my own boss. I'm going to go to the
pool or go hit golf balls or whatever.
I'm going to go to the store? That's not what people do.
Yeah. Yeah. So people were asking me before, you know, before I started this, like, oh, are you going to take some time off? Are you going to take a couple weeks or a month and just, you know, play? And I was like, I got to hit the ground running. I felt like if I didn't like have a to-do list on Monday, May 2nd, starting at 8 a.m., then I was, you know, I just needed that kind of structure. I need a list. I need a schedule. I need things to do, an agenda. So for me, it's just been really nice to like have a to-do list and be very focused and really keep working. So
awesome. Donovan, should we take a quickie break and come back and start growing Bryn about the how?
Yes.
About the how that it is.
So you're still attending this conference, but you're not really working it. So do you actually get to see what a conference is like now?
Well, yeah, I'm kind of actually, it's sort of a weird hybrid thing this year because I'm co-hosting the Creative Freelancer Conference with Elise Bennin. So she and I are sort of sharing the hosting duties.
Still got some things to do.
So I got some things to
do. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's like only one conference, not three. I mean,
yeah,
like not
four.
Even working.
Four this year.
It's true. It's true. And this is the first time I think ever that I haven't had crazy nightmare dreams.
We were totally
like weird eye twitches before the conference.
Talking about this on the way up to the room, it's like, this is what a real. This is what this.
This is what
this is
this
how
feels
people
like.
Deal with how when they're here. They
yeah.
walk around and they see things and they talk to people.
They meet people
and they don't
right.
scream and
that's crazy.
Run around like
I
a
know.
Chicken with its head cut off.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I will definitely be taking tons of notes at CFC this year because I am of the people.
Oh, you're now a freelancer. That is true.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
you got to run your own accounting or find someone.
Right.
To do that
exactly.
For you.
Exactly. So I'm definitely I'm hosting. I'm sort of co-hosting the event with Elise, but I'm definitely here as to learn as much as I possibly can.
That last year, that Creative Freelancer Conference was a huge value to me. Like, just really changed
That's
a
great.
Lot of.
Got
of
you
how
right
I did
out of freelancing.
It. Got me. Yeah, got me right out of freelancing this year. it's awful. Yeah. Convinced me that it was wrong for me.
That
no,
was wrong
it,
for you.
No, it made It made it work really well for a year.
Yeah.
And I actually just transitioned back into an agency job a couple months ago.
Yeah.
But not related to my experience at the HOW conference last year.
No, I get it.
But so how many HOW conferences have there been?
I believe this is 21.
So there's that kind of dates. That's the entire time that you've been involved.
Yeah, I was. I attended the first one. I wasn't really part of the planning process, but I remember I attended. It was in Miami, and it was a fraction of this behemoth that it has been.
It has grown.
Become. Yeah,
yeah. I know. We talked a couple years ago, and last year the attendance was down a bit because all conferences. Attendance was down, but it sounds like it's back up.
Yeah, actually, 2009 was kind of a tougher year for us. Last year we kind of started to see it tick back up, which was great. And then, this year's the attendance is really strong. So
Oh, hey, can you tell us where it is next year?
It's already been in the magazine.
It's already in there. Oh, because that was
all
the big secret.
All these years, it was like keep it secret, and then all of a sudden, it's like I was opening up last
issue.
It's in
issue the
directory. And it's just like, oh, there, it's in Boston.
Yeah, it's in the directory.
Oh, it's in
too.
Boston.
It's in Boston.
We're gonna go Boston. Some Havid buys.
There you go.
Pick up some smart chicks.
Eat some apples.
Okay, great. Well, sweet. Took away the great secret, but that's cool.
There's no big reveal anymore.
21 HOW conferences.
Yes. Yeah.
Aside from Vegas,
which
ones stand out to you?
What were your
HOW conference moments looking back that were pivotal?
The ones that I remember the most are the ones that had some sort of funny social, like I don't remember the program or the speakers, but it was like, what was the party like?
Right.
So
which is why I've eliminated Vegas because everyone always just says Vegas.
Yeah. Right. Now I think one of the most memorable ones for me was Atlanta. It would have been in 2000, I guess, 99 or 2000. That was my first year as editor and the first time that I had to get up on stage and say, hello, everybody, welcome to HOW Conference. And it scared the out of me.
It was a blast. The FCC won't get us on the show.
But it was a blast. I still remember that moment and seeing all the people. And so that was a blast. I remember some fun parties in Atlanta, the one at the aquarium. Mm-hmm. Did you guys go to that one?
I was not at the
Atlanta. We had the closing party at the Atlanta Aquarium, and it was epic. I mean,
is it what you would want in an aquarium party?
It was really cool. Yeah, it was super cool. And the party theme that year was really great. It was the typographer's ball, and so people dressed up as their favorite typefaces. Whoa. It was really great.
Tell me, now I want to know, like, how do you remember the letter people? Was the letter people after or before, like, do you remember the letter people?
The letter people.
They were like, it was like a kindergarten or first grade, like, TV show that would teach you kids the alphabet and, like, how T and H would hang out together and make
so
it totally different.
Oh, that's so funny.
And
they
were like guys in suits, and it was like, I'm T for I have tall teeth. And
that's hilarious.
So, but like big foam letter suits.
Yeah, right. No, that's great. Actually, I don't remember anybody like rocking the letter people as a costume, but that would have been awesome.
I've seen like going back, and I didn't realize this in like kindergarten or whatever, but like the letter people look like stoner hippies.
That's
like,
funny.
Like especially like they're one of the letters I think is a huge pothead or something like.
That's
P is for
like,
pothead.
Yeah, or something like that.
Thanks, kids.
Yeah.
No, actually, I remember Megan Patrick, my HOW colleague, went as Small Caps, and she had this tiny little hat on, and it was really, really great.
Oh, okay. What I would want for that is a slightly smaller but proportionately exact version of Megan standing next to her.
Like a mini-me sort of thing?
Like a mini-me, but not quite that small.
No, she kind of, you know,
that would be a subscript.
Small
cap.
Small cap. If it was great.
Would mini-me be a subscript, not really a small cap?
Yeah, that's kind of a subscript.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Let's get into this more.
Those were them.
Okay, these were found in the storeroom over here.
Okay.
Okay, and you said you're still missing a mic and...
Two mics.
Just like this.
Two mics, and there's like a box with some of my business cards with like little dice in them.
A cardboard box.
Yeah, it's a cardboard box.
Filled with...
Go ahead, Greg.
Has like these in it, and there might be some other miscellaneous things.
Yeah, I'm in Skyways, just like this.
Did you guys get Chicago albums?
Yes.
That is awesome.
I made these sketchbooks with my old French paper and my old Chicago albums, and we're giving them out to the people who are on our show like
you. That's great.
So you can pick out the one that you want.
That is so awesome. Oh, I'm kind of liking this one.
Yeah.
Wow, that is great. Feel that. It's engraved.
Yeah. I made them. I've already felt them.
Yeah. Oh, don't be a jerk about it, dude. You can feel it again.
Oh, I know. No, we really like
it. It's engraved.
Yeah. This one's actually like the Tony who helped me make them, the guy that works for
that
me.
That one's got
He took
sweet
the other
embossed.
One of this because he's like, it's embossed.
That one's
like
my favorite.
Yeah, that's really cool. Wow, these are great.
Yeah.
These are really great. Thanks, guys.
Hey, not a problem.
Cool. Okay.
So, that was
How are we doing?
But I did get rid of all my extra French paper that way.
Yeah, there you go. That was great.
We doing on time, Don?
I think we're about halfway done. So
okay. So
actually,
I've completely lost my train of thought.
We've got people coming in and out of this thing. We may
trying to locate our potentially stolen equipment.
They've released some of it, so obviously the cleaning people are the ones who took it.
I'm sure it just got packed up and sent to the AV room.
All right. Now, Bryn, we've got some questions from yesterday's guests for you.
That frightens
me. And the first one comes from Diana Valentine.
Okay.
Would you choose tomatillo or chayote to make your next recipe? And I don't even know if I'm pronouncing those right, or what I'm doing. Or
tomatillo and chayote.
As I said, I ate a banana for breakfast because I'm
like
completely out of this.
Some sort of squash, I think. I don't know what the latter is. I've never had it or cooked with it. So I would say tomatillo for sure. Because you can make a wicked salsa.
What is your favorite? Well, this is for me then. What is your favorite type of squash or vegetable or something that most people don't eat because they don't know about, they don't know how awesome it is.
What's the hidden gem
of
the vegetable kingdom?
Really? Wow, that's hard. Ever had spaghetti squash?
It's been a long time.
Spaghetti squash is awesome.
Isn't that kind of, the really weird, you open it up and it's like spaghetti in there, but it's
kinda.
Squash?
Kinda. Hey, what do you do with it if you go and pick it up from the store? What can someone do?
So the spaghetti squash is roughly the size of a kid's football, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, it's football size and shaped-ish. You whack it in half, scoop the seeds out, put it on foil and on a baking sheet in the oven, and bake it for an hour until it's kind of soft. And then you take a fork and you scoop the stuff out of it, it's kind of like spaghetti. And then you just throw spaghetti sauce or whatever else you want
on
it. Yeah, delicious.
All right,
it's a winter thing.
Do we have another question? I can't even remember.
Yeah, this is from Stefan Mumau. He says, how does it feel, truly and honestly, to be completely unemployed? And then we started discussing that she wasn't employed, but he says writing is not a job.
Wow. Yeah, wow. He's got some thoughts on writing.
Wow. So writing is not a job.
I think
so the world could
exist. Somebody failed grammar in grade school and is just angry.
I want to see Stefan present without using any words at all. Well, maybe he would mime it, for example.
The beauty is the guy that says writing is not a job has 5 books.
He's got 5, yeah.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I think he might have been teasing a bit there.
But what is it like to be unemployed?
actually, I'm self-employed.
Yeah, that's different.
So I'll correct.
We'll keep pushing that,
Stefan. No, it's good. You know, I've been working on some stuff that I find incredibly fulfilling. So far, it's pretty awesome.
So I want to ask you, and not to skew between these two topics too much, but the How conference is one thing.
Yes.
It's like a one. You do it once a year. There's a big buildup, and it happens, and it explodes, and then it's over, and then you go back to doing the magazine. But
it's
I kind of want to talk.
Not quite like that, but
no?
Go right ahead.
Okay, that's my perception.
Okay.
I know that you guys spend all year planning it, though, right? Okay. But I kind of want to talk about the magazine, as we have at the school that I used to teach at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have subscriptions to basically everything.
Sure.
And they don't throw any of it away. So there's this room upstairs that has House dating back, not quite to the Ruby Lith era,
yeah, right.
But dating, let's say, back to like 92, 93.
Cool.
When design was horrible.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Do we need to take another breather here, Donovan,
yep,
for security purposes? We're finding some things. We've located notebooks. There's still a few key items that we're missing.
First off, I'm John Bauer.
Hi, John.
I'm head of security in the
Donovan.
How are you?
Hi, I'm Bryn.
Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. Okay, just check this door.
Okay.
Right now, and it's your keys. How many keys do you have for this room?
Two.
So those two keys are the only ones that can open them as of right now. So I'm going to do a lock interrogation. I have a device that I can put into the lock here,
mm-hmm,
and I can see exactly who's been in this room.
Yeah, I mean, they did swap it out.
And Megan told me that CS was in here to reset the room.
Mm-hmm. You know, we assume that they just thought it was stuff they needed to clean because part of it has already been returned.
Right.
Yeah. This was just in storage.
So I'm assuming it's a misunderstanding. We just need to locate the items.
Okay. So the items that are in...
It's two of these microphones.
Two microphones.
We had a
stand
third. We had a third
cable.
One. So.
Okay. So you're missing two of these.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then a box of...
With some miscellaneous...
Some promotional items, little business cards, some dice in a plastic bag.
And then, like, the things that the microphones go into.
Oh, okay,
the sleeves.
A couple of the miscellaneous items.
So were they in boxes or... Were they
there was just one box.
One
the
box.
Microphones were just sitting on the table like this one is now.
Okay. And maybe our AV, they might have brought them down to our AV department or something.
That's kind of what we're thinking probably.
Check with them as well.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna go down and have a lock interrogation done, and then I'll get back for you guys.
You can take a if you got a cell phone camera, you can take a photo of this and show your AV guys. They'd probably because they're exactly
not a bad
the
idea.
Same.
I'll get out of the way.
You don't want to be in the picture?
No, it's all right.
She's the most photogenic one of us.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, actually, that's a really good idea.
I'm sure you probably have.
Because that probably looks different from. I mean, that's
not
your standard.
Okay, I'll bring that down and see if they maybe took it down there by mistake.
All right, well,
I'll get back with you guys just in a few minutes, okay?
Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
I will give the Hyatt credit. They are sending everyone up here to check on us that they possibly can, and that makes me feel pretty good. It's like the weirdest thing to see, like, to have a publication in design. I think you can go one of two routes. You can go what I think to be like the communication arts routes, where they strive for like a timeless quality. Like, you can look at this and here it is.
Otherwise,
and
no,
it's and everyone's going to be happy with this for forever.
Okay, should I bring you some water?
No, we're good.
We're good for right now.
Okay. So I can just stand like that.
No problem.
But it has kind of a thing where sometimes if you're doing everyday work, it can be a little...
I'm not trying to make a judgment call one way or the other.
I'm just saying...
What I'm trying to say is the other way to do it, which I think is the way that Hal has done it, is to stay, like, exceedingly current. Like, what is happening in design right now? And there's a lot of, like, trend spotting that comes into that. What I found looking back was that, How Magazine 1992 doesn't look super hot today.
It looks like 1992?
Yeah. What were we doing in the early 90s as a profession? Who thought that was a good idea?
Yeah. Yeah, you guys, I mean, you're still new enough to the whole thing, but I was involved with a magazine, you know, a number of years ago when, like, the computer was the new thing, right? And so it was like we've gone from Ruby Lith and doing manual paste up to actually assembling pages and doing some layout on the computer. And the conversation at the time was all like, oh my God, you know, is the computer just a tool or is it something that you, that it has a conceptual role in the work?
Is it its own? Yeah. And I think that's where a lot of that conversation had to have been taking place because you started to see
another processor. I'm just going to have to hit brochure go and it'll even think it out for me.
Right. Exactly.
You would just see sort of the elements of the computer being used as the conceptual approach instead of as a means to deliver, which I think is where we eventually wound up.
Right.
But it's all at the same time, and I would use it for this purpose. It's almost like this, like a great catalog of where exactly where was design in like March of 93.
Right.
You can pick up an old how, and you know
what design looked like.
Right.
It was a snapshot of that moment.
And I think that still carries through. I think that carries through in the modern magazine. I think in 10 years or 20 years we're going to look at.
Yeah. What are we going to see?
Are we going to look at the last
couple issues? What are we going to see where we're going to say, what are designers thinking? What aspect?
Are we going to look back on this super, like, seriously beautiful cover on this last issue? We're going to look at that in 20 years and be like, God, that's hideous.
It's so,
I can't stand it.
Well, I mean, I think design, like, generally has gone, it's gone back to the handmade, the hand-drawn, hand-rendered, you know, I mean, the cover for the magazine, this issue being sort of a prime example of that. I mean, that was completely all hand-done, and it's beautiful. And I think we sort of went through this whole computer influence of design. The design has to look like it was made on a computer because that means you're cool and you're sophisticated and your technology, you know, you're technologically savvy. And it was sort of almost a statement. And now,
The person who did this has a computer.
Right, exactly.
They've got the new tools.
They've got the new tools. And so we've gotten past all of that. And I think, you know, I think the design spent like the 90s and the early part of the 2000s kind of wrestling with how big a factor is the computer in the work itself. And now we're like, okay, we want to make stuff again. We want to screen print. We want to letterpress. We want to cut paper. We want to make things. I mean, everybody's got a sideline gig. Everybody's got an Etsy shop.
Everybody's making
t-shirts. Everybody's, it's like people need to make stuff again. And I think it kind of gets us back to cutting Ruby Lith, you know? Yeah. It's like pulling screens. It's the same kind of doing something with your hands and getting away from your computer.
Yeah. But I think that there's like no one's bringing stack cameras back, right? Like the silk screening, like that's a thing, and people found
no one has
that
an office big enough to put
very
it back in.
Yeah,
accessible.
Seriously, right?
Where God, I was somewhere for work. It was not that long ago, and some they still had their stack camera set.
Presstype is back,
probably because they couldn't get rid
of
it. Presstype is back.
Well, Vera was just like sending out Presstype a couple weeks ago, right? And I got the sheets. I was like, these are amazing. I have no idea what to do with them. I was like, I should make something.
Yeah.
And then
Presstype is back. It's like it's I don't know. And probably the stuff that is being made right now, you know, we'll look at that 20 years from now and be like, "Oh, isn't that cute? It's all handmade and handbound and it's, you know,
why was that
craft paper and letterpress and it's really sweet and it will look dated at that point." But
totally. I think that's going to happen regardless. I just feel like I don't know. Well, I want to say like I feel like man, the 90s have aged horribly and yet at the end of the 90s, I was like, the 80s have aged horribly.
Give it another 10 years, and you'll be like, man.
That's retro cool.
Yeah, well, I think what it takes.
Pink and bright pink and tea looks hot.
It takes that modern eye to isolate those particular bits that can still work and can make them work with a slightly modern slant. Like when bell bottoms came back as like flare jeans, like they even changed the name.
Right.
They were you could kind of look at them and say, oh, yeah, those are like bell bottoms, but they really weren't.
Right.
Like, if you get down to the details.
That acid-washed look or stone-washed has never come back like it was.
Yeah, like stone-washed, like that's one of those details you eliminate when you are bringing something
back. Right, exactly, exactly. But, I mean, it's all really cyclical, and it'll come back around. I mean, I think the thing that's... There's a lot of stylistic stuff that's trendy, but I think the idea of designers actually making stuff is... That's not a trend. I think that's going to stick around.
I think people always need already for a while stuck around. I agree.
And I think, you know, sites like Etsy and just the ease of which it's so easy now to build an e-commerce function into your own website so you can actually make and sell stuff. And before Etsy came along, before any of that came along, it was like you didn't have an outlet to sell anything.
Mm.
And so I think the idea of self-directed work is not going anywhere.
Right. And I think that's one of the best things I think that has happened to kind of our industries is people are trying to find where modern designers fit still, because there is the kind of grassroots movement, there is the crowdsourcing movement, and things are kind of constantly changing and evolving. But I love the fact that any designer can still just go out and make their own stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's so much control over the process and the creativity and the execution and the selling that you have when you do that.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to take a break, and we got one last question for you before we take off.
Awesome.
So our last question is, do you have a question for Emily Cohen, who will be the next guest?
Oh, wow. I want Emily to talk about how she has seen the design business change, because she and I have probably been in it, connected to it for about the same amount of time.
I feel like we could probably lead with that one. We're just going to... That's not like a what... What's your favorite word in Scrabble? Diana's question from last year, but...
Do I need to, like, have a crazy fun question?